Hey everyone, welcome back. Today, we're going to do a deep dive into what happens when partnerships go bad.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you're all excited, you're drafting that agreement, maybe you're about to sign on the dotted line.
Right.
And you're not really thinking about what happens if, things hit the fan.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to be looking at today through the lens of a really interesting case, Dreyforst v. Dreyforst.
Oh, that's a great case.
Yeah. And I think you'll find that this case, while it might sound dry on the surface,
yes.
It's about three brothers and two feed mills.
Yes.
It actually has some really important insights into the Uniform Partnership Act, or UPA,
yeah.
That are super relevant even today.
And it's especially relevant if you're about to enter into a partnership because there's a lot of assumptions people make.
Exactly.
Going into it that may not actually be true.
Yeah. So let's dive right in. And maybe you can give us a little bit of the background on this Dreyforst case.
Yeah, so what's really interesting about Dreyforst is it really highlights what happens when you dissolve a partnership. And these are three brothers,
okay,
Cletus, Roy, and Claude Dreyforst. And they decided to go into business together. They started a feed mill business.
Okay.
And you would think, they'd be on the same page.
But, family businesses. I've seen enough family dinners to know those can get messy.
Yeah. They didn't have a written partnership agreement.
Oh, lewd by flag number one.
Big problem.
Yeah.
So they were just operating on assumptions and good faith family trust.
Okay. So what happened? Did the feed mill just crumble?
Well, it went on for a while, but eventually in 1975, two of the brothers, Cletus and Roy, they decided they wanted out of the partnership. And so they formally served Claude with a notice of dissolution.
Okay, so they wanted to split, but why is that such a big deal?
What?
I mean, can't partners just, shake hands and go their separate ways?
Well, this gets into, they were a partnership at will, which means there was no fixed term, no end goal in sight. And the UPA actually says any partner can dissolve a partnership at will whenever they want. So it wasn't a matter of if they could dissolve, it was how.
Okay. All right. I'm intrigued. So how did they end up dissolving things? Did they like draw straws or something for who got which mill?
Well, that's where things get interesting. So Claude, wanting a clean break,
right?
He said, let's just sell the business and we'll split the profits.
Makes sense.
Seems pretty reasonable, right? But the trial court, they decided to actually physically divide the assets of the mills. So each brother got a mill.
Wait a minute. Hold on. How do you physically divide a feed mill? Did they bring in like a construction crew and just saw the thing in half?
Well, and that's the crux of why this case became such a big deal. It wasn't whether they could dissolve. It was how you handle what happens after you dissolve, the winding up process. And the UPA actually has some very specific rules about this. And Section 38, subsections 1 and 2 of the UPA state that unless a partner has wrongfully dissolved the partnership,
okay,
they have the right to have the business wound up. And a key part of that is having the assets liquidated and being paid in cash.
Hold on. Wrongfully dissolved, you mean like there's a right way and a wrong way to end a partnership?
Yeah, and that's a great question because it highlights a legal difference between just dissolving a partnership at will,
right,
and then breaching a partnership agreement. So wrongfully dissolving usually means you're breaching a contract.
Okay.
But in this case, they didn't have one. So they were well within their rights to dissolve.
Gotcha. So the trial court basically ignored the UPA and went rogue.
Well, thankfully, the appellate court stepped in and said, nope, not how this works. He actually sided with Claude.
Okay.
And ordered that the entire business be sold and the proceeds split equally. No in-kind division of the assets.
Okay, so I'm guessing there was a good reason why they were so insistent on the sale. What was so important about cash in this case?
Well, they actually laid out four really compelling reasons. And it's important for anyone listening to understand these because they highlight why just divvying up assets isn't always the best approach.
Okay. All right. Lay it on me.
Yeah.
What are those four reasons?
All right. So number one, it's all about determining market value, trying to figure out what every piece of equipment is worth, the building, the land. It's a logistical nightmare.
Yeah.
And it opens the door for arguments over who got the better deal. A sale just settles the score. The market determines the value.
Right. No more squabbling over who got the rusty tractor.
Exactly. And the second reason is it provides a clean break. No shared responsibilities.
Okay.
No lingering financial ties. You get your share, you move on with your life.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially in a family business. I can just imagine the awkward family reunions where they're all still arguing about the feed mill.
Exactly. Number three, it's about protecting creditors. So imagine if they had outstanding debts for supplies or loans.
Right.
Liquidating the assets makes sure everyone who's owed money gets paid before the partners see a dime.
So like the court is saying, pay your debts first, then you can fight over the scraps.
Exactly. And the fourth reason they gave was to ensure equal opportunity, because a sale lets any partner bid to buy the entire business if they want.
Oh, so it's not just about splitting up. It's also about potential continuation.
Oh.
Interesting. But I have to ask, I mean, does this mean that every partnership dissolution has to end in some kind of fire sale? What if the assets aren't, you know, physical things like a mill? What if it's, say, a website?
Yeah.
Or like a client list? How do you split that up?
You're asking all the right questions. And the court actually did address that, saying that even intellectual property, like those intangible but valuable assets, should be part of the liquidation process.
Oh, wow. So no divvying up the website code or arguing over who gets to keep the client list?
Nope. It all gets assessed for fair market value and sold off.
Wow. It really makes you think about how important it is to have that partnership agreement in place from the get-go.
Absolutely. When you leave things unsaid, you're basically letting the UPA step in.
Right.
And its default is liquidation.
Well, that's a pretty powerful lesson for anyone thinking about partnering up, whether it's family, friends, business associates. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. We'll dig more into the specifics of those partnership agreements and what they should actually cover when we come back. Okay, so it's clear that having a solid partnership agreement is like having a spare tire in your car. You know, you might not need it every day.
Right.
But when you do, boy, are you going to be glad you have it.
Yes.
So let's get specific. What are some of the things that, you know, can help us avoid ending up like the Dreyfuss brothers?
Well, you want to address dissolution head on in your agreement. And I know it's the dreaded D word nobody wants to talk about when things are good.
Right.
But you have to have a plan in place for what happens if you need to unwind the partnership.
Okay. So no more assuming the UPA is going to swoop in and save the day.
Yeah.
We need to spell out exactly how dissolution works. But what does that actually look like in an agreement?
Right. So your dissolution clause should outline the entire process for ending the partnership, including who can initiate it, under what circumstances, how assets are going to be valued and distributed. You know, it's not always a 50-50 split.
Right. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any, like, creative ways to handle dissolution that might be better than just a straight split or a sale?
Yeah, I mean, you could have a right of first refusal. So one partner gets to buy out the others if someone wants to exit.
Okay.
Or maybe you set up a predetermined formula for valuing the business, you know, based on a multiple of earnings or a third party appraisal.
All right.
The goal is to make sure things go as smoothly as possible, even if the relationship has gone sour.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, okay, we've dealt with the breakup. But what about decision making during the partnership? You know, partnerships are a bit like a three-legged race.
Oh, I like that.
Sometimes you're perfectly in sync.
Right.
Other times, well, you know, things get a little tangled.
Yes.
So how do you ensure that things are running smoothly decision-making-wise throughout the partnership?
You're absolutely right. That needs to be crystal clear in the agreement. You need to decide who has authority to make which decisions.
Okay.
Do you require a majority vote or does everything have to be unanimous?
Right.
You know, think about the different scenarios that could arise.
You know, I always get so focused on those big strategic decisions, like should we expand into a new market?
Right.
Should we take on investors? That I forget about all the day-to-day stuff, like who orders the office supplies? Mm. Who gets to pick the coffee machine?
Right.
I mean, do you really need to spell all that out in a legal document?
Oh, believe me, those little decisions can cause huge headaches if they're not addressed up front. So a well-drafted agreement should also cover those operational details. And, you know, it might lay out specific roles and responsibilities for each partner, or a system for resolving disagreements over what might seem like, you know, minor issues.
Okay, so clarity, clarity, clarity.
Clarity is key.
Okay, so we've tackled dissolution. We've talked about decision making. What else needs to be on the partnership agreement checklist?
Well, another critical element is how you're going to share profits and losses.
Okay.
I mean, it might seem straightforward, but you know, emotions run high when money is tight.
It's easy to agree to split the profits when you're popping champagne.
Right.
What happens when the business hits a rough patch? Who absorbs those losses?
That's why you need that formula in place beforehand.
Right.
So you might split profits and losses equally, or you might base it on each partner's initial investment or maybe how much time they dedicate to the business.
Okay.
Whatever you decide, make sure it's documented in the agreement.
Transparency and fairness from the start, right?
Absolutely. And speaking of fairness, you also want to clearly outline each partner's contribution.
Right.
You know, what is each partner bringing to the table and how are those contributions valued?
So it's not just financial contributions, right? Like,
right.
What if one partner contributes expertise or a really valuable network of contacts? How do you measure the value of that?
Yeah, that can be tricky.
Right.
But you still want to try and quantify those non-financial contributions the best you can. Maybe you assign a dollar value to a certain level of expertise, or you agree on a way to measure the value of client referrals.
Okay.
The key is just to have a transparent and mutually agreed upon system in place.
Gotcha. So we've covered dissolution, decision-making, profit and loss sharing, contributions. Anything else we need to think about before we wrap up this section?
One more crucial element, and this is huge, dispute resolution.
Yeah.
Because even with the most airtight agreement, disagreements happen.
Oh, they definitely happen.
It's just human nature. So how are you going to handle those disagreements?
Right. I mean, no one wants to end up, you know, battling it out in court.
Yeah.
So what are some alternatives to a full-blown legal showdown?
Well, one common approach is mediation.
Okay.
So you agree to try and resolve the issue through a neutral third party before resorting to legal action.
Right.
It can be much less adversarial and more cost effective.
So it's like having a referee on standby in case things get out of hand.
Exactly. You could also opt for arbitration.
Okay.
That's where you have a chosen arbitrator, you know, often a retired judge or an attorney specializing in partnership disputes, make a binding decision.
Okay, so it's like a mini court case, but without all the drama and the expense of a trial.
Exactly. The main thing is to have that process in place so that when things do go wrong,
right,
you've got a way to deal with it.
This has been super helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we've created this blueprint for building a partnership that can actually last.
Right.
And weather those inevitable storms. It's like a prenup for your business.
I like that. And remember, this is just a high-level overview.
Right.
There might be other details that are relevant to your specific partnership, but hopefully this gives you a good place to start.
Absolutely. Well, we've covered a lot of ground here, but I am eager to hear what other wisdom you have to share.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've gone through this Dreyfus case, and we've kind of mapped out the essential elements of a good partnership agreement. But now, you know, I kind of want to shift gears a little bit and talk about you, the listener.
Okay.
And what you should be thinking about as you go into, you know, that partnership meeting.
Right. Because a lot of times these legal cases and these contract clauses can feel really abstract.
Yeah.
Like something that's happening in a courtroom somewhere, but not really relevant to your day-to-day life.
Right.
But the truth is, whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur or just starting out, you know, the principles we talked about today, they apply to every partnership.
Yeah.
Whether it's big, small, formal, informal.
I always love like practical advice. So if our listeners were to walk away with just three key takeaways from today's deep dive, what would those be?
Okay, so takeaway number one, clarity is king. When it comes to partnerships, ambiguity is your worst enemy. So don't rely on assumptions, handshakes, or those we'll figure it out later conversations.
Yeah.
Get everything in writing, be as specific as possible, and make sure everybody understands what's been agreed to.
Yeah, it's like the old saying, get it in writing or it didn't happen.
Exactly. A well-drafted partnership agreement is basically a roadmap for your business. It clarifies everyone's roles, their responsibilities, their expectations, and it minimizes the potential for, you know, future misunderstandings and disputes.
Awesome. All right, so takeaway number one, be clear. What's number two?
Think long-term, even if it feels a little uncomfortable. It's easy to get caught up in the excitement of starting a new venture, but it's really important to consider what happens if or when the partnership dissolves.
Okay, so you're not just planning for success, you're also planning for the what-ifs.
Exactly. So by addressing those potential challenges up front, you create a much smoother transition, even if things don't go as planned. And that's where that dissolution clause we talked about really comes in handy.
So be clear, think ahead. What's takeaway number three?
Don't be afraid to seek professional help. Drafting a good partnership agreement is not a do-it-yourself project.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't try to perform surgery on myself. Some things are best left to the pros.
Exactly. So a qualified attorney can help you navigate the complexities of partnership law. They can make sure the agreement is tailored to your specific needs and that your interests are protected. It's an investment that can save you so many headaches.
Right. Potentially save you a lot of money down the line.
Absolutely.
So just to recap, be clear, think long term, and don't be afraid to call in a professional.
You got it. And remember, a successful partnership is built on trust, transparency, and a shared understanding of the rules of the game. And the best way to establish those rules is with a clear, comprehensive agreement.
And as we've learned from the Dreyfus case, those rules are a lot easier to follow when they're actually written down.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive on partnership dissolutions. Hopefully you found it informative and maybe even a little bit entertaining.
And as always, be sure to check out the show notes for links to the Dreyfus case, the relevant sections of the UPA, and some other resources that you might find helpful.
And if you want to dive even deeper into partnerships, be sure to join us next week. We're going to be talking about limited liability partnerships and limited partnerships.
Ooh, those can be tricky. Until then, happy partnering, everyone.